Morning, everybody. You ought to get the opportunity of being up here and seeing all these bright, shiny faces out there. It's pretty special. How many of you are here for the first time today? First time ever to Ananda? Welcome. Glad to have you here. You may notice that I'm not Asha, nor is this David. David's actually back there incognito, but my name's Dambara. This is the voice of God, Shanti Rubinstone. And Asha is down in Los Angeles. She flew down this morning. There's a group of people that drove down early this morning. They left here about 4 o'clock and are driving back late tonight. And the reason for that is there is an event down in Los Angeles that actually signifies kind of the birth of why we're here. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. 62 years ago today was when Swami Kriyananda, as a young youth of 22, met Paramahansa Yogananda. The story is a long and beautiful one, but the point is that it was September 12th, a Sunday actually, when he came to Hollywood Church and met Yogananda for the first time and was accepted as a disciple by Yogananda. And that began his learning about this path and ultimately led to his founding Ananda. And all of this, and all of us. And I don't know about you personally, those of you especially that have been here a while will know what I mean, but I shudder to think where I would be, or what I would be doing if it weren't for the blessing of having Ananda here. So in a way, this 62nd anniversary of that special day is kind of our own birth, our own birthday of discipleship to Yogananda, to this path, or at least this special ray of blessing. So we'd be delighted, especially those of you that are new, to talk to you further after service out in the courtyard and tell you a little bit more about what Ananda is. But meanwhile, I wanted to ask you another question. How many of you play golf? Not very many. Maybe those of you that do aren't here today because you're out there. Stupid question. Anyway. So, since you don't, and since I'm not really a golf expert either, but let me ask you, just kind of like us talking here, what's the point of golf? I don't know. Yeah, hit the ball. I mean, to get the ball in the hole. All right, is that just it, to get the ball in the hole, period? Is there a, you know, socialize, okay, that's the other side of it, yeah. First one? Frustration, that could be, or learning how to use language you've never used any other time in your life. So you might say it's what to hit the ball in the hole, maybe in the fewest strokes possible, all those things, all right? So, and there, I mean, there are subtleties, you know, the fellowship of being with other people, the social aspect of it. Somebody once told me it's the healing aspect of the green, you know, that you're on the whole time. Green is a very healing color, vibration, etc. So there's, you can get more and more subtle to that. You know, if you were to tell somebody about what the point of golf was, you'd be nice and objective and like that. So I'd like to transfer that a little bit. What's the point of our life? What would you say it was?
Self-realization.
Self-realization? Okay, that's pretty high up there. That's good. Yeah. Higher consciousness? Okay. So all those things. Now, some people, maybe not here today also, might say the point is to get as much as possible as you can for yourself. Or to get as much money as possible, or as many friends, or as many relationships, or, you know, fill in the blanks. There's a lot of people who seem to be going after that. Maybe we did at some point, too. Maybe that's why we're here. We realize, well, that didn't work. Okay, let's try something a little more refined than that. But I'd like to offer the idea that if we were to look at our lives objectively, just like a game of golf, you know, we might think to ourselves, okay, so we could try this for a while, and after maybe taking 150 strokes to end that game, I might think to myself, boy, I'm not doing this so well. You know, these other people seem to be going at it pretty easily and having a good time, and I'm really frustrated here. How can I learn more about this? At that point, maybe we start thinking to ourselves, I need a coach. Now, I'll segue over here to a fun movie. I don't know if you've seen this movie, but it's called The Legend of Bagger Vance. Ever heard of that or seen that? Many people have seen that. Okay. So, that's a golf movie. It stars Will Smith as a caddy, Bagger Vance, helping out this golf player, Randolph Juna, who's on hard times. He's not doing so well. And he's about to throw in the towel. Yeah. How's this? Better? Okay, good. We are having microphone karma, those that you were here last night. It's my karma, probably, but this'll tie into the service a little bit, too. Just wait, and we'll find a way. So we've got Randolph Juna, who's the golfer. And, you know, was a pretty good professional golfer, but then he just kind of lost it. Got a little frustrated, started drinking a little, you know, like that. But fortunately, this caddy, Bagger Vance, comes along, and he's a pretty sharp guy. He's got some pretty good advice, and we find out eventually that he becomes kind of a good coach, not only a golf coach, but maybe even a spiritual coach for this guy. Now, those of you that know the Bhagavad Gita, the fun aspect of this movie that maybe a lot of people don't know is that it's a parallel to the Bhagavad Gita. Bagger Vance is kind of a funny name, but Bagger Vance and Bhagavad are sort of similar. Randolph Juna, Arjuna. So we have Arjuna here asking his coach, Bagger Vance, who this is the only movie in which Will Smith played the part of Krishna. Another little bit of trivia for you. All about, what do I do? How do I, you know, I'm losing it here. And Bagger Vance very patiently explains just kind of step by step what he needs to do. In the same way that those of you that have read the Bhagavad Gita or heard of it, Krishna very patiently explains to Arjuna when Arjuna is ready to throw in the towel, right when the battle, the game, is about to happen, says, this is no fun. I quit. I'm out of here. But Krishna, I know that you're my teacher. And if you've got any words of advice, now's the time. So Krishna very patiently explains to him, okay, Arjuna, first of all, you're acting very foolish. You and I are friends, we can talk here. So you're using very wise, sensible words, but you're being a coward. So I'm going to tell you why. And in the same way, Bagger Vance explains to Arjuna just what he needs to do to really get his game back. So in the same way for us, once we get to that point of being open to a coach, a teacher, a guru, in a spiritual sense, and we say, boy, my game is just not as good as it can be, but it's the best I know how to do, you know, at that point, perhaps we start saying, all right, I need some help. I wonder where I can find it. We start looking around, seeing other people that maybe seem to have a better clue than we do, and eventually we find a coach, and that's the guru. And nowadays, a guru is just about anybody that's got any kind of words of wisdom, you know. But ideally, it really means somebody who has achieved what we're trying to achieve spiritually. And ultimately, that's oneness with God as the point of light. Now, for us, initially, it may just be getting along with people better, playing a better golf game, whatever. Maybe just learning how to relate better in marriage, in work relationships, to not get so reactive, you know, to not get so thinking of ourselves all the time, to think more about other people, whatever it may be. But we get to the point where we say, all right, God, whoever, you know, depending on our belief system or our non-belief system, I need some help. And that's the point, just like when we did our purification ceremony up here. It's beautiful. The words we open with are, I seek purification by the grace of God. You know, I seek clarification. Help me, Lord, help me, coach. And the coach comes along and says, open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. It's a great story, because when Kriyananda met Yogananda for the first time, and, you know, they went back and forth talking a little bit, just kind of Yogananda reading him, determining whether he was ready, and then he realized he was. But the first question Yogananda asked is, he said to Kriyananda, I give you my unconditional love. Will you give me your unconditional love? That's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, we think, sure. But really, how unconditional are we at this point? Do we just never, ever think of ourselves? So Kriyananda was very honest. And he felt it so strongly that this was somebody that he knew he trusted. He could tell just from meeting him then and from reading his autobiography of a yogi. So he said, yes, I give you my unconditional love. Then Yogananda said, will you give me your unconditional obedience? Ooh, that's a tough one, especially for us independent Americans. So he was honest there and said, what if I don't think you're right in what you tell me. That's pretty straightforward. But Yogananda said, I'll never do anything, I'll never ask anything of you that God himself does not ask me to ask you. And Kriyananda felt the truth of that. So the same way, we learn eventually to trust God more and more, usually by falling flat on our face when we try to do it ourselves. And we get to that point of just learning a little humility and saying, all right, coach, I'm ready. I'm ready to play. I need your help. How can we do this? And that's when, as Yogananda has done, he says, ah, now I take charge of your life. So it's useful for us, as much as we possibly can, to get to that point of remembering that God is there, the coach. Yogananda, personal trainer. PYPT, Paramahansa Yogananda, personal trainer. Okay? And he's there for us. But it's when we're at the point of saying, okay, I'm ready for your help. I'm ready to listen. I mean, what good is it? You've probably been in this situation. Now, each of you, you have something unique to offer. Think of what you have learned in this life and in past lives. It's a special awareness, a special insight, a special skill. And what if somebody, you know, I mean, you'd love to share that with somebody. Maybe it's parenthood. Maybe it's just really being able to teach somebody how to live, what life is about. And if they just kind of don't really care and don't really listen and sort of give lip service to asking you that, you know, you're not really going to be that interested in sharing it. But those of you that are parents, you know, if your child has ever come up to you and said, honestly, I'm really interested in what you have to say. Oh, boy, your heart just, at last. I'll tell you anything. I'll do anything for you. And that's how God is with us. That's how the master, Yogananda, or whoever our spiritual teacher or guru might be. That's how they are with us. That's their job. That's their love, their joy, to share with us what life is all about. Now, I want to read something to you. Recently, down in Los Angeles, Swami Kriyananda, that we've been referring to, who created Ananda, is down in L.A. and is going to be down there for the next several months because he felt just this really strong calling from the people there. It was pointed out that there is a stronger concentration of Yogananda devotees in Los Angeles than anywhere else on the planet. And there's a strong need. People really want to know what these teachings are. And Kriyananda is one of the few people left alive that was with Yogananda, that was his close disciple. And he feels this, I mean, as he has all of these 62 years, this deep desire to share this love with people. So he's down there in Los Angeles till at least April, doing that in a big way, as much as possible. And recently there was just an informal gathering. It was supposed to be kind of an open house for this meditation group in West Hollywood. Swami wasn't planned to be there, nothing like that. A group of maybe 20 people were going to get together. But suddenly Swami Kriyananda said, you know, I think I'd like to go there. He was not feeling all that great, but he just felt, you know, I should go there. And so he did. And in the great style of texting, they got a message out to everybody just like that. And so they had 100 people, like within half an hour. And Swami Kriyananda talked for a while, and then he threw it open to questions. And I noticed this last year, I think it was, when we were down there, and Swami Kriyananda gave a talk and asked for questions. Very thoughtful questions there, a lot of real, honest, sincere spiritual seeking. And I think he's tuned into that quality too. And the first question that was asked, I'm going to get and read to you. Swami's talked a lot lately about this feeling of bliss that he feels inside. Just more and more and more, and you hear his voice breaking when he describes it, and you can know that it's real from what he's describing. You want that feeling. It's just so real and palpable. So, first question was, when you say the goal of life is bliss, could you elaborate on what exactly bliss is to you? Swami replied, bliss means the same thing to everybody in a certain specific way. It's just the absolute happiness of being who and what you are. It's this feeling that life is wonderful, that everything in life, even the sad things in life, lead to understanding and wisdom, that there really is no tragedy in life, that the ups and downs of duality are an appearance only. The end of every road is a certainty in yourself that you are perfect in yourself. And you need nothing to achieve that perfection. And I tell you, that feeling is not just a definition, it's a feeling.
and it becomes so intense sometimes that you can hardly stand it. And I just have a hard time not weeping. And at this point, he started weeping because it's such an intense feeling. But life is, in spite of all the pain, all the cynicism, all the meanness and everything, underneath it all, life is bliss. And the goal of life is to achieve oneness with that bliss. Okay? You don't need to define truth. You need to become it. That's the important thing. That's worth meditating on for a while. When I went to print this out, it was set on 40 copies instead of one, so I ended up printing out 40 copies. So the first 40 of you that come to ask for a copy of this, that's our anniversary, birthday, discipleship gift to you today. But that ties in here too to a very important thing, which is that, I don't know about you, but you know, sometimes I can look at spiritual figures like Swami, still alive right in front of us. The guy is 84, and I mean, Gary McSweeney will talk about his son Brian, who's down there working with him, who just says, you know, this is the hardest I've ever worked in my life. I can hardly keep up with the guy. That's what everybody says, just nonstop, because Swami's whole focus is to share as much as he can, as much as he can with the time that he's got, and has always been that way. And furthermore, his energy, he'll say, is not his own. You know, it's God's energy just pouring through him. Now, we want that. We want that feeling of bliss that he described. We want that unending energy. I've heard it said in other places that the goal of life is to just feel a sense of freedom, inward freedom in everything that we do, and a sense of inward bliss, both of those things. We know we want those things. But how do we get there from here? And I see an example of somebody like Swami, and I think, man, oh man, I can't picture myself doing that without being totally flat on my back, exhausted. So it's easy to get discouraged and give up, perhaps, if that's, you know, a tendency that we might have. But it's important in this reading, you hear the quote from the Bhagavad Gita that refers back to what Swami also said in this, in that we really have to do this in our individual way. It's so beautiful the way God expresses uniquely through every single individual. I'm going to tell you just a small little thing. Yesterday, Asha taught a class here on how to pray so that God will answer. So I happened to be around maybe about 45 minutes into the class, and I was leaving, but there was somebody that was entering at the same time that I was leaving. And I said, "What you looking for?" And this person said, "Asha's class." And I just, you know, informally, just kind of heart to heart, I said, "Oh, you are so late." And this person said, "Well, actually, I've got cancer, and I've been very sick, and so it's really good that I am here at all, so hush your mouth." I thought, "You are so right." But it made me realize all over again how often do I, maybe you too, just kind of quickly judge, you know, people that are a little different than we might be. And maybe we're, you know, usually it's the case that if you're quick to judge, you're a little insecure about something in yourself. And it's easier to judge somebody else and sort of be done with it, you think, than it is to change something in yourself that maybe is unsettled. So that was God's way of reminding me once again, don't ever, 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 ever judge. Because everybody has a unique battle that they're fighting, story that they're working on, great script, great movie. That is their unique story that God is expressing through them. And more, Swami Kriyananda talks about this, that when he looks out and he sees people, he realizes that every single one is trying to find that same bliss. And we're, the way that we are trying to find that is our own unique expression, our own unique way of playing the game. And God is working with us personally on that. And when we see that every single one is trying to do that in the same way that we are, we just can feel nothing but compassion, just but love for that. We may not feel that all the time, but that's just because we, you know, things don't happen like that usually. We're working with that quality. So bottom line to it all is self-acceptance, not taking ourselves so seriously, not thinking that we're supposed to be like somebody else. We might use that as an example, yes, like Kriyananda, beautiful example. Or when I see the people that have been around Ananda for 20, 30 years, the disciples that have been around Swami learning from him, I see they're all unique individuals, human, down to earth, just like Swami is, but I see them more often. And yet, I can see that, you know, they've learned how to maybe transcend some of those qualities that I'm still a little struggling with, whatever. But isn't, I mean, that's the beauty of community. Yogananda really, really stressed the importance of spiritual community so that we can all just work together and see the examples all around us, especially when we're looking for the best in everybody. So that's a little bit of homework here, is to go out and everybody that you see, as much as you can remember, try to remember the best in them. That's something that I've seen Swami do all the time, one time with me personally in the only interview I ever had with him. I was just impressed at how he was able to just take wherever I was, which was kind of confused and stuck at the time, and just offer a little suggestion, a little hint, a little advice that helped me move forward, that helped me move up. You know, he saw my potential, he saw where I was trying to go, even though I didn't know how to do it at the time. And he just said, well, you know, what do you think about this? And how about this? And what if this? And it wasn't his, you know, thinking of himself. It was him totally thinking of, all right, here is God trying to find bliss. I wonder if there's anything that I can do to help. I personally know for a fact that at that time, Swami had a lot of stuff on his mind. I'm amazed now when I think back to it that he was even able to take the time and offer advice to me personally. But I will tell you, he was not there thinking of himself. He was completely thinking of how he could help me. It stuns me to this day. And it's a great example of how I aspire to be. So the more that we can see that in everybody else, that potential that everybody is struggling to seek, then the more we realize to have a little more patience with our own selves too. You know what I said before about that tendency to judge revealing a little bit of unsettledness or insecurity within ourselves? The more bliss we can feel, the more God remembrance we can feel looking at other people, the more we tend to give ourselves a little bit of slack too. And just be patient, you know, like a loving parent would be. And that's the way God wants us to be. He doesn't expect us to all be cookie cutters of each other. He expects us to express our own unique qualities. And he will not fail to use our talents. But any time that we feel that we're a little stuck in a rut, you know, we don't know quite how to get out of it, at that point, call on the coach. Coach, I need your help here. I'm a little stuck in this groove. You know, how do we get our game back? And when our heart is truly open, then Master says, ah, now I can take charge of your life. And at that point, we feel that unending bliss that Swami's talking about here. Blessings.